Kevin Sinclair here at Irish Illustrated at irishillustrated.com, here with my coworker Eric Thomas on the recruiting beat covering Notre Dame. We're going to talk about a range of topics here. We're going to dig into a few 2025 class related topics that kind of stuck out to us in recent weeks and sort of through the tail end of spring camp. And we're also going to dive into some of the 2026 recruits that have been standing out to us, among other things. So, Eric, we earlier this week talked about the Dallas Golden recruiting win, which was obviously major, I think, for if you just were to sort of pull Notre Dame fans who kind of follow recruiting, say like a month ago, who their number one want is. I think many would have said Dallas Golden. So it had been a bit of a lull from the commitment standpoint, in terms of not a lot of these like flashy wins happening, but that one popped up. I'm sure many Notre Dame fans listening certainly agree with the excitement around that. Now at the top of the class, we're talking about another player from Florida, and Ivan Taylor, safety, ranks right around the 40 overall range. If you sort of average it out between the composite and 24/7. And then, of course, there's Deuce Knight, big-time quarterback. Even more excitement around him after some of his sort of freaky scores and throws, frankly, at Elite 11 not long ago. Deuce, obviously, is being pursued heavily by Alabama and Ole Miss. Alabama's Alabama, whether Nick Saban is there or not. He lives in Mississippi. It's a nearby program. And then, of course, you have Ole Miss, which, you know, not exactly an SEC juggernaut, but a successful team kind of in general. And then, you know, led by Lane Kiffin, who, you know, very charismatic guy, very well-liked guy, an aggressive recruiter from everything I've ever heard about him. And a capable recruiter and quite a resume, you know, NFL level, USC, out at Ole Miss, you know, a fun guy. And that's his in-state school, and they're coming at him. However, you just keep on looking at the visits, let alone the ones he took in 2023 to multiple games and every recruiting event. And then it's the calendar flips to 2024, and we see him at the January 20th junior day. And then he returns for, I believe it was 3 days in March, and connecting with recruits like Mark Zachary when he was there, and other commits and other prospects. And then he returns for the blue and gold game. And it just seems to me he's getting closer and closer with the coaching staff. He's a leader within the class, you know, in terms of sort of keeping in touch with all the commits, rallying the troops, so to speak, recruiting top prospects. But of course, Alabama and Ole Miss recruiting your Mississippi product quarterback is always concerning. Eric, what do you make of that? If you want to just sort of touch on that. And then also, during your first week joining us on staff at Irish Illustrated, you did a profile on Deuce, which was a lot of it revolved around film evaluation. Give me your thoughts on those two topics.
Yeah, so kind of diving in with the competitors here. Anytime you have either a home state school or a regional powerhouse, in this case, you have both, kind of, you know, snooping around to recruit, you're going to have a natural uneasiness that's going to be present. There is some excitement behind being the first quarterback that gets brought in for a new regime in Alabama. There is some excitement about staying home locally to play for a program like that, especially with an offensive-minded coach like Lane Kiffin. But ultimately, I do think what you talked about with following the visits, Deuce has not done anything to indicate that his momentum towards signing day, ending up with a faxed over copy in South Bend, is slowing down. He's consistently been on campus. He's consistently been recruiting for Notre Dame. Even today, he was tweeting out pro Notre Dame content right before we got on the podcast. So I think in terms of confidence level with Deuce Knight and everything, until he gives us a reason to believe that there has been a shift in his outlook or in his mindset, Deuce Knight's committed. He's in. And I'm going to continue working with that, you know, with that assumption, regardless of outside factors, up until the point where maybe he steps foot on another campus for a visit, which I very much so doubt is going to happen at this point, given everything he's signaling. In terms of his film evaluation, it is not a surprise that these schools are after him. You hear developmental prospect, and a lot of times that can kind of send a cold sweat down your back, because developmental prospect for a quarterback often means, well, you know, he's got so much work to do before he's playable, or he's got so much work to do before he can even, you know, threaten to be pushing for time. Deuce does need to come together as a consistent passer. He needs to be able to string quality throws together and be able to hit his marks and give guys balls where they can take the ball and move upfield. That being said, he does show the ability to do that. He's got a big, big arm. He is an electrifying athlete. When he's moving, he is so much faster than you would think he is, especially when he first takes off. His acceleration is pretty unbelievable. His tape is just full of these poor linebackers who start taking an angle like they're going to be able to hit him, and then all of a sudden they're on the ground and Deuce is 5 yards upfield. It's pretty remarkable. But he's especially threatening to defenses when he moves with the anticipation to run. For a left-handed quarterback, typically you would think moving to his left would be, you know, something where it's maybe in his wheelhouse a little bit more. Moving to his right would be the developmental part. But for Deuce, he actually shows extreme high-level capability to throw on the move both to his left and his right, which is really unique for a passer at his age. He delivers with strength. He does show the ability to kind of take a little bit off the pass and put a little bit more air under it. I'd like to see more of that from him. But he does show that there's some knowledge and capability of kind of taking off all the velocity and giving him a little bit of a changeup. Really, I came away most impressed with Deuce Knight in that he is able to attack all levels of the field with his arm. He's able to avoid pass rushers and really sort of mitigate any advantage that comes from running a spread offense that the defense can get, which is that there's not always the number of blockers you need to get the defense kind of at bay. Sometimes you're going to have free rushers in your face and you need to deliver accurately with someone there. And Deuce Knight does show the ability to do that. Once again, the key word for him and his development is consistency. It's not that there is things he needs to show that you need to project at the next level. He just needs to show the ability to do them time and time and time again. So I'm really high on Deuce Knight. There's no wonder whatsoever that this guy is, you know, a whole player. And for Notre Dame to pull that sort of athlete out of the talent-laden South, and specifically out of Mississippi, which is just not a state that feeds into Notre Dame, it's a significant win to add a top talent like that into the class. His skill set is really unique. And if you want to talk about O'Malley's point on Irish Illustrated Overtime, I guess it was 2 weeks ago now, where he mentioned, you know, you always recruit over. You want the next quarterback to be better than the last one. This is the type of player where if you're trying to follow CJ Carr, this is the type of player that you're going to take a dice roll on and say, hey, you know, maybe he's not better than CJ walking in, but top end, what he can be, this is the type of player that could maybe, you know, rise to that next level even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just based on the physical talent alone, you know. And, you know, I tuned into, there was a live stream of one of his games. It was either, man, my memory's not what it used to be, but it was either late season or early playoff. They were down by a lot. I think they were down by 24 or maybe more. And he led his team to a comeback when the throws he was making 50 plus yards down the field were unreal. The ball placement, he's a very skilled player. And as for his recruitment, like, for the record, when I interviewed him a few weeks back following one of his visits, I just asked him straight up, do you think you're going to visit any other schools? And he said, no, I don't think I will. And that was it. He left it at that. So, you know, it seemed to me that was a genuine response, and that was maybe, you know, what he was thinking in that moment. We'll see what happens with that. He's seems to me have a very close relationship with Gino Guidugli, who so many times when I ask recruits about him, who he's recruiting, they sort of laugh right away and then talk about how great of a guy he is. But he seems to be a really charismatic guy. When I say laughing, it seems like, you know, they find him humorous. He's a fun guy. And, you know, it's really a big part of success with recruiting is just sort of connecting with recruits more on that personal level. And, sounds like he's really good at that. He's known as a really good recruiter. You don't hear about it a lot because he's only recruiting quarterbacks, which is the smallest group of recruits per position, right? But things, you know, I feel pretty good about Notre Dame hanging on to him, but you can never discount Alabama and Ole Miss for a quarterback who lives in Mississippi. But, you know, sort of segueing into our next topic that has also has to do with quarterbacks, you know, recently, Eric, you and I dug into 2026 quarterback Brady Hart, who's certainly a hot topic for Notre Dame as they sort of start tapping into 2026 recruits more and more. Also, his teammate, 2025 receiver Javon Boggs. It's actually Javon Boggs, which I learned recently in terms of pronunciation. His teammate, who caught 93 of his passes last season for over 1,500 yards and 24 touchdowns. These guys are certainly a dynamic duo. I'll talk about my conversation with the offensive coordinator from Coco High School. But first, Eric, you know, if you can just sort of quickly sum up your thoughts on both after doing pretty extensive film reviews and just sort of profiles on both, that would be a good place to start, I think.
Yeah, so kind of with the natural segue here, I'll start with Brady Hart. He is a really polished passer for how young he is. Kind of like what we talked about with Deuce Knight, where you see him do the take a little velocity off and add a little touch to the pass. You see him do it. You want to see more. Brady Hart shows a frequent willingness to do different arm angles and deliver passes at sort of different velocities, different entry angles to the catch point. He's really a polished passer in that regard. He's not going to blow you away in terms of his raw velocity on the ball. Like, he's not firing laser beams like, you know, the Josh Allens and the Pat Mahomes of the world that are blowing you away. But he absolutely has the arm strength to deliver the ball to every area of the field. He has the velocity to deliver it in the tight windows, and he has the flexibility to really be a quarterback who can operate Denbrock's system. He has mobility. He's not Deuce Knight in terms of his ability to run or even his ability to, you know, throw on the pass, just because the athleticism is sort of a different category. But he absolutely has the mobility to hurt defenses when he moves off his spot in the pocket, particularly on design rollouts. Boggs is a little bit of a freak, man. He is one of the most fun players to watch in 2025. I mean, he has unique speed. He separates well. Especially at the top of his routes, he does a good job of separating well. He's pretty good at fighting with his hands and creating that last second little window for him to have room to maneuver with as he finds the ball at the point where he's turning and, you know, trying to catch it all at once. His body manipulation is pretty remarkable too. There's a number of catches, probably two or three of them, where he is basically just laying out towards the sideline and twisting his body to high point the ball as he's sort of falling backwards and going to land horizontally. And just the amount of control he has to be able to find the ball, twist his body, get himself there, cover it off, and make the catch in bounds is remarkable. I really like what Boggs would offer the 2025 class as a receiver based on the skill sets that are already in the class as well. He just offers a unique ability to separate and adjust to the ball in the air that, especially if you pair that with a guy like Derek Meadows, who's very, very adept at sort of a similar thing at a different size profile. I think that that gives you two very unique pass catchers, to add to this 2025 group. So very, very high on both of those Coco High School products.
Yeah. You know, and it's an interesting topic. They're teammates in this smaller town in Florida. I looked into a population a couple of years ago is just under 20,000, but you look at the sort of alumni list and the, you know, current or former NFL players that come from that area, you know, even former Notre Dame running back Torian Fulston is from Coco High School. And interesting enough, when I talked to his offensive coordinator we had a pretty long conversation last week, sort of digging into both Hart and Boggs, but also just, I'm personally kind of fascinated by all the kind of really like football intense cultures all spread out all over the America. You know, you hear about these small towns in Texas where even the gas stations are closed on, you know, Friday nights when there's a home game, because literally everyone's at the game. And, you know, those are kind of spread out all over the place, especially in the Southeast. And Coco High School is one of those places. And talking to the offensive coordinator, you know, actually going back even further, the first conversation I had with Brady Hart, he explained to me that when he was 8 years old playing Pop Warner, they ran a spread offense, you know, and he sort of joked like, you know, we didn't have the ability really, but we had a lot of heart and we went for this big spread. And so it's a kid who's been in a pass heavy scheme, you know, since he began playing football, transfers into Coco, the offensive coordinator, Adam Franco, excellent guy. He, you know, played at the college level. The head coach threw for over 10,000 yards at Central Florida. These are guys who really know football. You know, I've interviewed hundreds and hundreds of high school coaches, and this is a guy where it's just really obvious he had a special level of expertise. And you talk about Brady Hart coming in, the transition from run heavy to very, very pass heavy. He starts as a sophomore and leads them to a state championship season. They lost just one game to St. Thomas Aquinas by 1 point. I forget, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but Brady Hart threw for, I believe it was well over 400 yards and 5 touchdowns that game. Javon Boggs, I think, had 11 catches for 180 yards and 2 touchdowns in that game. So aside, you know, obviously the two of them had tremendous performances that day, but they had tremendous performances almost every week there together. And again, one thing that's always important to keep in mind is we're talking about a sophomore, and you're talking about his ability and everything you said, I completely agree with, but we're talking about a kid. He's about in the over 6'4" or 6'5" range. He's only about 180 pounds. He's got over 2 years of high school left. He's going to fill out. He's probably going to be a 200 pound quarterback, if not more than 200 pounds by the time he gets to college, or at least in the 195 range. And with that size and natural maturation, you're talking about upping just sort of torque on the football, which leads to, you know, just sort of more arm strength in general, more velocity on the ball. So it's going to be interesting to cover him over the next couple of years, assuming, you know, so long as Notre Dame doesn't move ahead with a different quarterback. But this is one we need to know. Talking to the offensive coordinator, just really described Brady Hart in ways I think a lot of people would describe Deuce Knight to me, which is very magnetic kid. He comes in and as a newcomer, transferring in and immediately gaining the respect of all his teammates, the leadership, the just sort of likability is all there. Visits Notre Dame, like just like Deuce Knight, loves Gino Guidugli. He told me he just fell in love with Notre Dame's coaching staff. That was before his visit. And then I think that all just sort of strengthened Boggs, excellent player being targeted by Notre Dame, Texas, and others. We'll sort of see what happens there. Those 2025 recruits taking official visits in June, deciding thereafter. So we'll see, but between the two of us, it's been really interesting to dig into both of those recruits, really exciting players. And then I think we should just sort of next tap into, you know, we discussed it already on the Dallas Golden commitment podcast we whipped up on earlier this week, but Golden's in the class alongside Cree Thomas, who I think is a little bit undervalued where he is as a low 4-star, really nice player. That's a really nice tandem, but there's several others who will be visiting Notre Dame, extremely talented themselves. Notre Dame certainly willing to take more at the position. Eric, take us through your thoughts on the additional cornerbacks kind of in play here.
Yeah, it's excellent to be able to get Dallas Golden into the class, especially this early. I think as Notre Dame fans, the last few years, it's sometimes easy to forget that the class filling up so early is, you know, not normal for a lot of schools. Getting these guys in, getting them committed, and allowing us to build that, I always refer to it as the gravitational pull of these recruits, is a massive part of the success that Marcus Freeman and the staff have had. There's so much more of a natural pressure to stay in the group and to stay involved with your brothers. And I think that having Dallas Golden in the class this early is only going to further cement this group. So on his addition, I think that that's just, you know, timeline-wise, is going to be significant. The other piece of this is I'm really, really keen to see how Mark Zachary's visits go over the course of the summer. He has a number of them scheduled. He will be at Notre Dame. I believe it's the second full week of July, along with, you know, the majority of the defensive official visits. when I spoke with the actually current Notre Dame commit Anthony Saka about it, he mentioned specifically that they were trying to get all the defensive guys, targets and commits together, get sort of that dynamic going and get that big group together so that they got the, you know, not in his words, but that family pitch together, right? I'm really excited to see what the feedback is coming out of that. And I'm excited to hear what his other visits take, because I think that there was a lot more certainty about his outcome early on in his process than maybe we have now. So those visits are definitely going to reset sort of the focus and the understanding of expectations moving forward. Tristan Haynes is another interesting one. Once again, he's probably more similar to Dallas Golden than Mark Zachary in terms of his size and athletic profile, but he is also another top end corner. Neither of these guys are, you know, talents that you necessarily want to leave on the board or guys that you would want to stop actively recruiting and pushing to get in the class. So I'm really excited about the prospects that we have available in 2025. It feels like in recent years, as you kind of round to this point in the defensive backs class, where you're setting your focus for their senior seasons and kind of rounding out the class, it looks more often a lot of times like, okay, we have 4 or 5 3 stars. We like the athletic profile. We're going to try and get as, you know, a few of them. We're going really hard because we believe in this. Now we have a number of, you know, top 100 or borderline top 100 guys that Notre Dame is very seriously in on. I do not anticipate them falling out of the finalist list for any of these. It's a very different dynamic at defensive back and specifically corner recruiting than we've had in recent years, even as it comes down to the final targets that have been identified. And that's a very healthy place for Notre Dame to be.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, we've talked about it quite a bit. Mark Zachary, I think, is, you know, I think Dallas Golden is a tremendous talent. But I won't be surprised if, you know, 3-4 years from now, we look back at it and Mark Zachary ended up being the best college player of them all. But Eric, let's segue into 2026 recruits that have, you know, sort of stood out to us. There's so many. We could probably do a 4-hour long podcast or getting into the long list of 2026 recruits we kind of dug into since, you know, Pot of Gold Day and through spring camp. But, you know, let's kick it off with you. I know you've talked with many of them recently. They hosted so many, like dozens and dozens of 2026 recruits over fall camp, especially after Pot of Gold Day. We'll discuss several of them, but Eric, who's off the top of your head, who's you know, one recent 2026 recruit you've spoken with that sort of stood out to you?
Yeah, from the guys I spoke with, the one that jumps immediately to mind is actually maybe my most recent conversation. It was Sincere Johnson. He's coming out of Ohio. He actually plays for the Glenville program that Ted Ginn Sr. coaches. Ted Ginn Jr. was produced. It's a really, really talented program. They consistently put guys at the next level. And I really appreciate what Sincere Johnson has in terms of like that next guy up. He projects as a edge rusher, although he's more of like that hybrid outside linebacker type than he is like a strong side defensive end, at least at his current, you know, frame and weight. He has really good tools rushing from the outside. He's got a little bit of burst to him. He doesn't necessarily convert speed to power in the way that maybe your top flight defensive ends would. But there's enough of that to his game and enough time left for him to grow that I'm curious how that part of his game is going to grow. He seemed, not to do a really crappy pun here, but he seemed like a really sincere kid when I spoke with him. You know, he was just really, really, he was really invested in, and, you know, his process throughout the recruiting gambit, he's really invested in leaning on the resources he has around them, be that his family members, be that, you know, other former recruits that are in his orbit. He's really close with fellow Glenville product, Arvell Reese, who's currently at Ohio State. I think the Buckeyes, you know, they haven't offered yet, but if and when they do, they'll end up being the primary challenger here. I actually really like his comparison to Arvell Reese. He made that comparison as a player. Reese is someone who, when he got to Ohio State, there was maybe a little bit of a question of like, okay, is he going to play outside? Is he going to go in? Are we going to put him on the end? I think there are some of those same questions with Sincere, and there's enough athletic ability and early production from him that he would be a really exciting prospect to take a chance on for that outside linebacker sort of money or viper, however they're calling it now, role.
Yeah, no doubt. I actually, you and I were talking about it, I think, yesterday or the day before, and I was trying to remember that linebacker's name. Yeah, Brandon Spikes out of Florida. I'm not saying he is Brandon Spikes or the next Brandon Spikes, but I am saying, like, his size at linebacker kind of reminds me of that. It's like,
he moves like him.
Yeah, he kind of moves like, you know, a big kid, 6'4", and up over 200 pounds as only a sophomore. It's like, can he be like a Brandon Spikes type who kind of like looks like an edge but plays linebacker, or is he going to play on the edge? I don't know. And I wouldn't say the latter would be, you know, a negative, because I'm sure he could be a really good edge player as well. And then for me, talking about another front seven player, Rodney Dunham stood out to me right away. You know, I'll get into it with another recruit we'll talk about in a minute, but Myers Park is a really good football program in Charlotte. They played against Bryce Young and Mike Gilbert in the season opener, and I tuned into that game. And Myers Park, yeah, again, they just have a lot of, they churn out quite a few Power Five recruits. I mean, Drake May, quarterback from North Carolina, played there. Rodney Dunham is about, he's like 6'4 plus or 6'5, and he's about 215 to 220 pounds. Again, we're talking about sophomores. He's got a lot of time to fill out, and he will. He is also a really good pitcher, from what I understand. And when I, you know, they offered him on Pot of Gold Day, right away, he jumped out at me as a kid who's really, really on profile, I guess, for Notre Dame as a recruit. And that, I mean, he's got a 4.3 GPA. Top tier student. Interviewed him after his visit, asked him, which is a common question to ask, you know, what was it that drew you to visit Notre Dame in the first place? And he said, well, after they'd offered me, I started looking into their acceptance rate and their academic standards and, you know, the majors that I'm interested in. And he was like really impressed with the really low acceptance rate and said, you know, that tells me this is a really good school. And, you know, when you ask a recruit what stands out about Notre Dame and they start diving into all the things they're legitimately interested in that are all academic related, you have to think Notre Dame's got a really good shot there, you know. And he got up there, I believe it was less than a month after they had offered. You know, it's a bit of a trip all the way from Charlotte on his own dime, came with his parents, visit what seemingly went really, really well. Strikes me as just the kind of kid who goes to a school like Notre Dame. We'll see what happens. And then the rankings came out, and he was, I believe he was in the top 50 of the rankings. So I guess I'm not alone in thinking that he's a really talented recruit. I also think he's very notable in relation to Notre Dame specifically. So keep an eye on him. What's next on your list, Eric, in terms of, 2026 recruits that sort of stood out recently?
Yeah, his name has come to the forefront here, at least for me, for a couple of reasons. Dia Bell, he's the quarterback down at American Heritage, the powerhouse program in South Florida. Dia is a little bit unique in my mind. One, he is ranked in the initial, 24/7 grouping as a five-star. He's one of the top players in the country. He is also someone who came up extensively when I talked to Dylan Faison, obviously Jordan's younger brother. He's already committed to Notre Dame in the 2026 class. It turns out that the Bell family is actually family friends with the Faisons. They've played together with them when they were younger. They played against them. So he's someone that was very interesting from just like an Irish connection, level. I looked into his tape a little bit. It's obvious why this guy's a five-star, man. He's got a little bit of that like Bryce Young to him, where he's not the biggest passer in the world, but he does have such high end passing ability, whether that's his natural arm talent, whether that's his understanding of the concepts that are playing out ahead of him that allow him to throw with anticipation, that he really does showcase top ability. And as much as we talk about, you know, shorter quarterbacks having difficulty seeing the middle of the field, he shows sort of an inherent, I guess you would call it, awareness that allows him to still attack that level of the field with a high level of production. The first throw when you watch his film is like a jaw dropper. He throws what they call a hole shot against cover two. So it's a perfect pass. It usually has a little bit of air underneath it, and it comes in front of the safety behind the corner. They're very, very difficult passes just because of the geometry involved in fitting the ball in. And like I said, it's the first thing he shows on tape. And he throws, you know, different arm angles in and still makes those throws consistently across his tape. I really like his mobility. And I am a sucker for mobile quarterbacks who will move to throw rather than move to run. Guys who just keep their eyes upfield, they'll get right to the line of scrimmage and fire something. That's Diabel to a T, man. He is great on the move. He's got a great arm. He has excellent velocity on his passes. And I think he's someone who, if Notre Dame had the opportunity to choose between him or Brady Hart for 2026, you're looking at a significant win in either case. A little bit of a different passer, but in either sense, you're looking at two very, very high-end options for Signal Callers in 2026.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt. Florida just loaded with quarterbacks. Well, kind of like as usual, but at the same time, especially in this class, as it relates to Notre Dame, Noah Grubbs, Brady Hart, and Diabel, who they've been keeping tabs on lately, hasn't been a guy who's on the offer board, you know, that for an extended period of time, sort of like some others, but a really good quarterback they're certainly keeping tabs on. And you know, another recruit stands out to me. He wasn't in the initial top 247 rankings that came out recently. Personally, I would have put him in there, or at least would have argued toward that, is a defensive back out of Charlotte, another Charlotte prospect, Independence High School, named Nicholas Reddish. He mostly just goes by Nick Reddish. He's a safety. Plays, what I really like about him is, you know, just partially his position versatility. He often plays like single high safety looks, but then he'll come down and sort of play in the nickel. He'll come down into or around the box and attack. I love a safety who's an excellent open field tackler, like a sure thing tackler in the open field. A guy who can catch up when, you know, a receiver catches the football. He's not covering that receiver, but can make that touchdown saving tackle, who can also come down and pop a running back and stop him at the line of scrimmage, that sort of physicality. I also love a cornerback who's very heady, you know, just intelligent, makes reads. When you watch the film, you can tell he recognizes where the ball's going much quicker than anyone else in his defense. And he's on his horse getting at the ball, getting to the catch point. He's making the right decision. And do I jump the route or do I just play the man and stick him on the, upon the catch? Just seems to make really good decisions that way. And then he's really, really quick, man. He closes so quickly. Those touchdown saving tag, all those things I just described. He's got all of that. He's only a sophomore. I believe he has it was either a 3.6 to 3.8 GPA, really bright kid. Visited Notre Dame for a multi-day visit, where it ended on the Saturday of, you know, the spring game, where he attended that spring game. Told me that he spoke with, you know, Al Golden, Mike Mickens, and Marcus Freeman one-on-one, one after another. Marcus Freeman asked him which position he feels like he will play and that they love his film, which I do as well. Said that he feels like he'd probably be a nickel defender. And I think that's actually quite smart on his part. Nickel defenders, naturally, where they're positioned on the field, closer to the box. You're more involved in run support. You come down and get after the quarterback. If you have that skill set, like we saw with Thomas Harper last year, I think he's got a lot of those same tools. I think he's got maybe even more speed. Really bright kid, fits Notre Dame really well. So keep an eye on Nick Reddish, a.k.a. Nicholas Reddish, out of Charlotte. Eric, give me another one.
Yeah, for me, it's another pretty highly ranked player here in the first ranking unveiling. I really, really like the film of, I know he goes by RJ, but also Rodney Sermons. He is a top cornerback. He is actually from Rancho, is it Cucamonga in California?
That's right.
He's pretty unbelievable, man. He's 6'1", 180 as a rising junior. The first thing you notice about him, electric top end speed. I mean, I know he's a track star. You think track stars in California, you're obviously looking at a pretty unique pool of the Olympic sports there. His speed is pretty unbelievable. He also does return punts and kicks for special teams. And you can just see in the way that he moves, he just blows past guys. The biggest thing for that on the cornerback side is that also translates well in his catch up speed. He does have good technique, especially when he's able to man up. He's able to line up off the ball. He flips his hips cleanly, and he's able to recover well if the receiver makes a good move on him. But his speed allows him to catch up. There's a couple instances on his film where he doesn't quite get a clean turn, especially when guys cut across his inside. And he's able to make up that difference and that distance utilizing that top end speed, break up the ball. I also don't have the measurements here, but just watching him play, I'd be willing to guess that this guy has a pretty large wingspan because he plays long. I mean, he gets up, and even if like he's a little bit behind doing like a trail coverage and the ball's put on an absolute dime mark, he's able to get his hand up and over and break up the pass, even if it's over the receiver's shoulder. So there's a lot to like about the technical side and the athletic profile of his game. He also obviously, like I said, plays for one of the better programs in California. He's all over the place. I really like what he would offer the Notre Dame defensive backs room. I also think it's worth mentioning that his dad was a running back for USC in the 90s. So anytime you can pull a USC legacy and turn him into a productive Fighting Irish football team member, I'm always going to jump at that opportunity, man.
Yeah, no kidding. I also did quite a bit of homework on Sermons myself, and that's why he's actually a pretty good topic. Not only did his dad play at USC, his uncle played at UCLA and then the NFL for a few years, and then his older brother played at Northwestern for a few years as well. And so, you know, just the point of a kid like that from who lives in LA, traveling all the way out to Notre Dame during spring camp on his own dime with his dad and visiting. I sort of joked like you had your dad there, USC alum, kind of like fox in the hen house kind of thing. But what was that like? And of course, I was sort of kidding, but he said his dad was so impressed with Notre Dame. And he also connected with Brandon Lockhart, who was also visiting that day, who's also a defensive back from Los Angeles over at Loyola, where former Notre Dame recruit Sayre Wright played a cornerback position. Sounds like he can play safe, strong safety or corner because he's a big hitter. But with all that speed, I think you'd want him at corner. But we'll just wrap this up with one more recruit who really stood out to me among all the offers last month. And that was receiver Brody Keefe. It was just sort of a coincidental thing. I talked earlier about Rodney Dunham out of Myers High School Myers Park in Charlotte. They are teammates there. I watched that season opener against Bryce Young and Mikey Gilbert, as I previously explained. Bryce Young was incredible in that game, getting after the quarterback and blowing up the backfield. Mikey Gilbert made some excellent plays, catching the ball, going up and getting it, just these difficult catches along the sideline and so on. And was also an incredible comeback win for Charlotte Christian. But there was one play that stood out to me easily, way more than anything anyone else did in that game. And it was this receiver. They were sort of just inside the red zone, I think around the 19-yard line. Myers Park really needed a score, and this receiver runs vertically into the back corner of the end zone. The cornerback's right on his hip. Micah Gilbert, who's playing safety, is coming across from the safety position, recognizing where the ball's going. Ball comes up high. He was already so close to both the sideline and the back of the end zone. I'm like, I'm already getting ready for the next play. And this kid goes up and makes this outstanding catch for the touchdown. Like, he really goes up for it. Looks like he's around 6'3". I just immediately think like, man, who is that kid? And just immediately sort of assume he's a senior. I look up the roster and Max Preps match up the number, and he's a sophomore, and his name's Brody Keefe. So I was always wondering about him. I know he also visited Notre Dame for a game last season. He knows Jack Larson. He's familiar with Micah Gilbert and Bryce Young, of course, because he's played against them. But this kid is really talented. Ohio State is recruiting him. You know, schools that are serious wide receiver schools are recruiting him. He explained to me something that I think is going to be a really interesting topic in relation to recruiting at Notre Dame, that, you know, what I asked him about sort of his interest in Notre Dame and do you think there'll be a player for you sort of thing. And he explained, you know, I'm really going to keep an eye on Mike Denbrock's new offense and how Notre Dame gets the ball to their receivers this year. And hey, these last few years, there hasn't been these high receiving totals for receivers. There hasn't been like that really clear go-to guy so much. It's going to be really interesting. And I think important for Notre Dame to establish more of that in the upcoming season, because players like Brody Kiefer are watching. So that's going to be interesting. That kind of, I think we should wrap up the 2026 discussion that way. But Eric, just to wrap up our pod here, second podcast, since the Dallas Golden announcement earlier this week, when it comes to the 2025 class, just real quick, what's maybe something or a couple of things that, you know, you're keeping an eye on, you're really interested to see kind of unfold here in the coming weeks and months?
Absolutely. This is actually a good lead into a piece that's probably up by the time you're hearing this. Diving into the 2025 wide receiver class, obviously Notre Dame has three guys committed, two of those with last names that we all recognize as football fans. Looking at the class, you obviously have Elijah Burris, you have Sean Terry, and you have Jerome Bettis Jr., the sons respectively of Plaxico Burris and Jerome Bettis Sr., Notre Dame legend. I watched the tape of those guys. In terms of the wide receiver room as it stands, what I will say about those guys, I know they're maybe a little bit lower rank than what a lot of Irish fans are looking for at this point in the cycle or looking for in general. But I did like the overall composition of the class thus far, with obvious caveat that there is significant room to grow. Burris himself he's a raw prospect. There's no getting around that. But the athletic profile is there. The pedigree is there. And I really like his instincts as a route runner. I like that they added someone who looks so fluid making his breaks and trying to create separation. I like what they have to work with there as an athlete. Terry is a little bit different in that he's also sort of that movement profile, that fluid athlete, but his is more so after the catch. He's got a really, really unique ability to make guys miss. And I'm not sure where he fits exactly in the Notre Dame depth chart at wide receiver moving forward. Not saying position-wise, I think he'll be a slot, but I'm not sure exactly where he slots in terms of path to early playing time. But I do think he's one of those guys with that ability where he will immediately make the team better, especially at tackling in the spring and summer, and he'll instantly threaten for a special teams role. Bettis Jr. is a little bit different. His tape, I saw someone who was maybe a little bit more of like that jump ball specialist. They probably have a lot of value in moving the chain situations, short yardage, goal line, just because of his ability to be strong at the catch point. And that leads me into what I'm really interested in. Is the wide receiver class for 2025 really based around adding Derek Meadows and another one? Because to me, it seems like it's add Meadows or bust with where it's at. He's such a unique prospect, athletically, size-wise. He's not in a heavily pass-dominant offense, and he shares the ball with other top-end receivers. But he's 6'5". He's a Gatorade Player of the Year for track last year as a sprinter and as a hurdler. He is such a unique profile to add to this room in terms of a ball winner, in terms of a guy who can separate with his speed, with his acceleration at that size. He is absolutely that number one wide receiver profile that Notre Dame is missing in this class, and a guy that could come in and with his body type, his composition, and really the unique skill set that he has in combination with all those things. With Bo Collins moving on after this season with exhausted eligibility and with Deion Colsey seemingly a potential graduate transfer option, he provides a really sort of unique dynamic and body type in the room that could have an impact right away. Also, we already mentioned Javon Boggs. I really like his game. I think that he adds something unique even amongst those four profiles, assuming Meadows is added to the class, in terms of his ability to separate and his ability to manipulate his body to the ball. It gives five unique pass catchers to Irish quarterbacks moving forward. I'm very interested to see if they can get Meadows in the class here, you know, pretty quickly thereafter his visits in June, and then kind of add maybe one, two more guys into the group from there. That's really what's sort of drawing into focus here for me, especially with at least three receivers moving on after this season with exhausted eligibility and the transfer portal sort of looming, obviously, you know, moving forward here.
Mm-hmm. And then just to quickly wrap up the pod, touching on, you just discussed a couple of offensive related topics, to talk a few defensive things here. I think obviously for any Notre Dame fans who follow recruiting really closely, the major concern is defensive line. Obviously, they lost CJ May to a decommitment in February. You know, we're looking at Damian Shanklin trending away from Notre Dame. Not a lot of options there. The sort of three tack or strong side end with a few recruits kind of trending away from Notre Dame that way throughout sort of spring camp. But Notre Dame, again, I think it's worth, you know, being the concern around that. It's understandable, but there shouldn't be a failure to recognize that this is a coaching staff that's capable of, you know, flipping a big time defensive lineman down the road, or, you know, sort of drumming up interest from someone who's maybe already on the board who we haven't really been talking about and assume Notre Dame wasn't really in the running for. So we'll see what happens there. Tom Loy reported, a 24/7 Sports national analyst who's often with us at Irish Illustrated, Notre Dame, you know, getting after Jalen Wiggins, a 24/7 Sports and a composite top 100 recruit, who's from Tallahassee, committed to the Gators, you know, Florida Gators. So we'll sort of see what happens with that. They'll keep plugging away. Personally, like if I was making a prediction, I would bet you they're going to make, you know, one big splash sometime between now and signing day, reeling in a player that they really need. They need players who have sort of the body type of a Jason Onye or Gabriel Rubio in that 6'4 to 6'6 range that play inside. I think that that's really important. If they don't land that player this year, it'll be even that much more important next year. And you don't really like to get in those situations where things are just so urgent, right? So you want to keep stockpiling the talent. And then I think of the linebacker position. I'm so interested to see what happens there. Talking to a source with knowledge of Madden Ferramo, one of my personal favorite recruits on the board in terms of just his overall talent, you know, Notre Dame really moved the needle there when he visited Notre Dame. He will definitely be returning for an official visit and giving them a fair shake. Max Bulla, from everything I have heard, is definitely an effective recruiter. There's also Noah McHale, who I believe might be the highest ranked between those two California linebacker recruits. He's been in Notre Dame several times. Notre Dame's in the mix there. And there's others, of course. There's Nathaniel Owusu-Boateng, who I think could be the very best linebacker recruit in the country, even if he might not be slotted there in the rankings. But Notre Dame is in the mix with some excellent linebackers there. I think Anthony Saka, the more I watch his film, the more I like him and his potential. I love his size. Eric, you talked to him recently. Great kid. So, you know, they're really doing well there. Kingston Viliamuasa, Jaden Osbury, Drake Bowen, Jalen Sneed, Anthony Saka, these players that keep stacking up the position. Nice work done there. What kind of something we expected when Marcus Freeman came to Notre Dame, and then they get Dallas Golden. He was the Cincinnati Bengals linebackers coach, getting Max Bulla after having James Laurinaitis. So they're stacking them up there. Interested to see how they fill out that class. But we've discussed a wide range of topics here today, Eric, and I think we wrap it up there. Thanks for tuning in to Irish Illustrated's Recruiting Podcast. I'm Kevin Sinclair here with Eric Thomas. Thanks for tuning in.